Quality proteins aren't just for special occasions. With Omaha Steaks, you get mouth-watering proteins delivered right to your door, individually packaged and portioned, so a great dinner is just minutes away. From Taco Tuesday to a weekend feast, taste the Omaha Steaks difference. Start getting flavorful proteins delivered today. Visit omahasteaks.com and get $35 off with promo code AUDIO at checkout. That's omahasteaks.com, code AUDIO. Terms apply. See site for details.
The Hard Shoulder with Kira Kelly and Shane Coleman on News Talk
with Kia.
Now, gambling and sport have long gone hand in hand in some respects. However, the introduction of online gambling now means people have the ability to bet at the click of a button on their phone, which has undoubtedly exacerbated the problem. We're joined now by Darren McGee, the journalist and author of the new book, Intimidation Games: How Gambling Hijacked Sport. It focuses on the gambling industry and how, I suppose, in his words, it has hijacked sport. Dara, thanks indeed for talking to us. What prompted you to write this book?
Well, I guess, you know, a decade of academic research, really. I've been an academic studying gambling, its transformation in a digital age for a decade now, and its effects on young people. And I guess over the course of that decade, I've become increasingly aware that a lot of this academic kind of writing on the issue isn't out in the public domain. And I became increasingly convinced that a book was a good idea. And so this has been in the works for about 4 or 5 years now, you know, to bring together both my own research, but also draw on the research of so many others and try to ensure that that makes it to a public audience.
You don't pull your punches in this book. You describe the gambling industry as parasitic. You say that the gambling on sport constitutes a public health emergency.
Yeah, although I should say the book aims for nuance and complexity, and the book doesn't necessarily try to take aim at the gambling industry, nor just at gambling itself. I'm not anti-gambling. I've long enjoyed a bet, as the book lays out there. But really what I try to do in the book is situate the rise of kind of gambling and its digital guise in, of course, the transformation that we've seen since the turn of the century. That is an industry that's been revolutionized by the advent of the internet, the rise of the smartphone, social media, data science. You know, the kind of gambling companies that emerged since the turn of the century are operating with a kind of technological foundation that, you know, is radically different to what the bookmakers had. And of course, you know, all of this technological foundation makes for a very different experience for young people today. It's faceless, it's frictionless, it's accessible 24/7. And of course, it's unavoidable in sport.
Talk to us about in-play gambling, because this is a relatively recent phenomenon. I mean, there was you could always have a bet on a game and the outcome of a game, but it's gone way beyond that now.
Yeah, arguably in-play is the single most transformative innovation in gambling in 100 years, particularly gambling on sport. Yes, in many ways, you know, when we thought about sport and sports betting maybe 20, 30 years ago, it was a relatively kind of discontinuous experience. And what I mean by that is a fan would place a bet, before a game and then kind of get on with the business of fandom. Yes, enjoy the game. And if, of course, their bet came up, then they would think about it again and go back and pick up their winnings. And I guess that meant that sports gambling was at the benign end of the industry. It had elements of knowledge involved, and frankly, you can see how it does then is befitting of kind of a bit of fun framing. Yes, I guess in play changes all of that. It fuses kind of sports in a modern era to kind of the casinos of Las Vegas. And I guess what I mean by that is, rather than being discontinuous today, it is a continuous, immersive, impulsive experience where a fan locks into a game and suddenly the game is not a single bet, but hundreds, if not thousands, of betting opportunities. A single match is carved up into all these opportunities. And that, of course, leads to more less mindful, more rapid-fire betting patterns. And we know that they're the type of betting patterns that when they become habitual, that's when you're moving from a bit of fun into a more kind of harmful realm of betting. And of course, you know, in-play mimics the casino. You will, many fans have told me it's a threshold. When you cross over into in-play betting, you're just a click of a button away from the online casino, because you're looking for that rapid fire risk and uncertainty, that feedback that, that gamblers will talk about. So it's an incredible invention for the industry, but it's changed profoundly what betting on sport is, and I would argue has changed fandom for a new generation.
And sorry, just to be clear, for people who maybe don't know about this, I mean, you can literally bet on anything that happens in the game, when the next corner will be, yellow cards, red cards, the next goal, pretty much anything.
Yeah, that's right. It takes a single game and it breaks it up, carves it up into hundreds if not thousands of markets. And that is kind of how many yellow cards, the next yellow card, the next goal, who the identity of the goal scorer might be, down to increasingly minute and trivial and bizarre, frankly, betting opportunities, you know. And there's a progression to that, you know. There's Sports Formula One are looking at in-play betting right now and looking at how they can take kind of data streams that all professional sport relies on today and use that data to enable new in-play markets. And so it's also unfolding at an incredibly rapid rate.
Talk to us about Elliot, a professional gambler who you spent time with.
Yeah, Elliot is the outlier in kind of all my academic research. And I met him by chance. I turned up in a study with a friend who had brought him along. And within kind of 5 or 10 minutes of a focus group, it became clear that Elliot was not your average punter. He had kind of a label for them. He called them mugs. And I asked him what he meant by that. And he took the next 5 minutes to lay out why you couldn't beat the gambling brands today. Because, of course, you know, as I lay out in a chapter in the book called The Mug's Game, they are two steps ahead of you at all times. And even if you are a shrewd punter, a practice known as stake factoring means that within your first 5 to 8 bets, most gambling brands today have profiled whether you are a kind of a winning customer, which in their terms means profitable for them, or indeed whether you're a threat. And if you're a threat, what we often see happen is you'll be limited or even your account closed. And so Elliot went on to lay out kind of what a mug looked like. It's fair to say his friends went quiet for a few minutes. And then I asked him, well, you know, you're here for a reason. You obviously gamble. And that began kind of a relationship that stretched out over quite a few years now. And I had said to him, if I'm ever writing a book, I'll get in touch. And by the time I did get in touch, he was betting kind of with Asian-facing brokerages. He was kind of paying for bundles of data. He is someone who studies every aspect of the game. He idolizes two figures that probably most people don't know, but are kind of in plain sight in that they're owners of Premier League football clubs. That is Matthew Benham at Brentford and Tony Bloom at Brighton, both of whom kind of made quite a bit of their money from betting professionally in the Asian gambling market, a kind of, you know, the market that really sets the odds globally and is worth kind of $1 trillion. So Elliot is the outlier, but, you know, in many ways he's entranced by sports gambling in a similar way, in the sense that he doesn't watch the games anymore. He's fixated on data streams all week and profiling the game down to a kind of, you know, a granular art in an effort to spot kind of areas of potential gain and edge, as he would call it, for himself.
That sounds amazing. You talk about how he ended up betting thousands of pounds on Solihull Moors versus Altrincham in the National League, because he's more confident there that he'll have the edge on the bookies in terms of data and knowledge and so on. It's really fascinating. Talk to us about how the betting companies, how they draw in the punters, the mugs, to use Elliot's term.
Well, I mean, there's a short and a long answer to that. The short answer is kind of genius marketing. Yes, recruitment is fundamental to the business model today in a kind of an age where there are so many betting operators and they're all locked in a kind of Darwinian struggle for the punters that they need to power the business model. Yes. Of course, the longer answer is that, you know, they spend billions. That is it's there in the title, how gambling hijacked sport. And how they hijack sport is spending billions annually on marketing and frankly becoming genius marketers, not just a case of crude volume. You know, I think the Premier League, one Premier League weekend last year had 30,000 exposures to gambling messages. And so there is a volume dimension, but there's also a kind of framing of gambling. And it's been an incredible success story in corporate terms, this kind of overturning of a century's worth of moral apathy and kind of reframing gambling as a mainstream entertainment form for a new generation. And how they did that is, you know, the marketing. They've sponsored football clubs, they've partnered with leagues, they've recruited athletes and celebrities to endorse the industry and legitimate the products and make it look kind of desirable, if not even just, you know, a normal part of being a fan. And so all of that kind of, all of that hijacking, that marketing is key to kind of how they draw them in today. And of course, you know, the Champions League final's coming up on the weekend.
Yeah.
And if you are a sports fan today and tomorrow, if you're on social media, you'll see offers that are just too good to be true.
Yeah.
You know,
you finished the book by talking about some of the people you spoke to who, you say, refused to be typecast as addicts suffering from something that couldn't be helped or avoided. You say they're actually living witnesses to the gravitational pull and predatory practices of a gambling industry unhinged from its historical roots and re-engineered about around one thing above all, profit. But you also go on to say they're survivors of a British state that abandoned its moral duty to protect citizens from harms, and above all, he and they will tell you that they are fans determined to protect future generations from harm. Why do you point the finger at the British state in this regard? And other, I mean, and other states, I presume.
Precisely. Yeah, it's not a case of just the British state. I think, yeah, globally, and that's one thing I think the book does quite well, is this isn't a British story, it's not an Irish story. This is quite a global story, and the pattern, of course, is the way in which kind of the industry has been incredibly successful in paving the way for its expansion. You know, the book looks at North America, it looks at the African continent, and we see similar patterns. And so really I'm pointing the finger there at what I think historians will characterize in decades and centuries to come as kind of an era when kind of liberal regulation met, you know, digital capitalism and kind of things got out of control. There was a real moral drift in politics when there was a utopian take on what technology is. Of course, gambling was very good at framing itself as kind of gaming, if not just a tech industry, another branch of the everything that the Silicon Valley gave us. And I think kind of, you know, you've mentioned there, addicts refusing to be typecast. Part of that's also the language that emerged in this era, responsible gambling, problem gambling. There are terms that didn't exist 30 years ago. And so all of this kind of coalesces to give rise to a moment where we kind of, we lost sight of the fact that kind of gambling's been around for centuries and it's not going anywhere. And the book, believe it or not, isn't anti-gambling. The book is kind of pro-sport, pro-public health. And it's suggesting that kind of this era has got out of hand, that gambling's not going anywhere, but it needs suitable, stringent regulatory parameters that privilege kind of the protection of public health above, you know, exorbitant profits.
Okay. The book is called Imitation Games, How Gambling Hijacked Sport. The author is Dara McGee. Dara, thank you so much for talking to The Hard Shoulder today.
Pleasure. Thanks for having me.
The Hard Shoulder with Ciara Kelly and Shane Coleman.
With Kia.
Weekdays at 4 on News Talk. Conversation that counts.